There are words you should not use on your LinkedIn profile. And the only reason I bring this up is because people actually do use these words on their LinkedIn profile. You'll see profiles where they say.
Hello and welcome to the Brand New You Show, the podcast dedicated to helping you build a credible brand. I'm your host, Ryan Roten. And today's guest is Josh Stimley, founder of Influencer Inc. Josh coaches C-suite executives to become thought leaders by leveraging their personal brands and influence to attract top talent, lead their teams effectively, and grow their businesses. Josh is also the author of the upcoming book, 60 Days to LinkedIn Mastery, which will be the main topic of our discussion today. Josh, it is my pleasure to welcome you to the Brand New You Show.
Thanks, Ryan. Excited to be here.
Well, I'm honored to have you on because you've done some pretty cool stuff that I think I need to mention. In addition to Influencer Inc., you're also the founder of the marketing agency MWI. You're also the author of the book, Chief Marketing Officers at Work. You had your hand in the book, Skip College, and you've also spoken all over the world, including given a TEDx presentation in Hong Kong, which is really cool. But it also brings me to my first question, which is homeschooling still illegal in Germany?
Yeah, unless they've changed the law in just the last few months or something. But as far as I know, homeschooling is still illegal in Germany. There are families who have been arrested for homeschooling their children there. It's kind of crazy when you think about it.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. Okay, before we get stuck up into your book, I do have one question that I like to ask all of my guests, which is, if you could vacation in only one place for the rest of your vacation days, where would you go?
Wow, that is a great question. I mean, if you were asking me where I'd like to go on my next vacation, that would be actually kind of tough too, because there are a lot of places I want to go. It's thinking about going to the same place all the time, you know? Actually, where I'd probably go to vacation would be Woodward, Pennsylvania, which probably isn't the normal response like the Caribbean or something. But what's in Woodward, Pennsylvania is there's a huge skateboard camp there. And I could go there and get trained by all the pros and skateboard as much as I want. And I'm a skater and my son's a skater. So that would actually probably be my first choice.
All right. Awesome. So obviously then you still skateboard on a regular basis, it sounds like.
I do when I'm not injured from the last time.
Speaking of skateboarding, tell me what it was like to sell skateboards out of the back of your car.
Oh, yeah. When I was a teenager, you know, this is why I am where I am today is because my dad loaned me $1,000 to start a skateboard business when I was a teenager. And I bought a bunch of stuff from the company's wholesale. And then I would sell it out of the back of my car at skate spots. And I would drive around to skate spots and just walk up to all the kids and be like, hey, I got skate stuff. You want to buy some stuff? I got some cheap stuff. It was like a drug dealer, except I was selling skateboard stuff. And that's how I got interested in entrepreneurship and decided that I wanted to start a business.
That's pretty cool. And you know, as your career progressed, you eventually started a business with the website called donlooper.com. Tell me about donlooper.com.
Yeah, Don Loper.
Loper, sorry.
But yeah, Don Loper was... It all started with a tie. So Don Loper was the clothing designer for the I Love Lucy TV show, which I did not know at the time, but I had bought a Don Loper tie from a thrift store, like an old polyester tie.
Okay.
And when the internet came out, I needed to use a username for an email address. And so I thought, oh, I have this crazy Don Loper tie. I typed in Don Loper. It was available, like Don Loper at, what was it back then? GeoCities or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was available. And then when I went to do my first website, I thought, donloper.com. Okay, that's available. And I started using Don Loper for my username for everything. So just everything I did in the early days was Don Loper whatever, because it was never taken. So that was my first website, donloper.com. And then when I started designing websites, I was like, well, nobody can spell Stimley or pronounce Stimley. So I'll just call my company Don Loper. And that's what it was for about a year until I brought on partners and they were like, this name makes no sense. We need to change this to a real business name. I said, okay.
Well, I think Stimley's easier to obviously to pronounce for me than Loper, but that's my problem. I also want you to know that I chuckled a little when you said when the internet came out, because there are still people who remember when the internet came out. It hasn't always been here.
Yeah, I talked to my kids. I'm like, you know, back when I was starting my business, the internet was just coming out. And I feel like I'm telling them like when radio was invented or something like, wow, my dad lived before the internet.
I find that funny. All right, let's get into some questions about your book. So the upcoming book is called 60 Days to LinkedIn Mastery, which is not only a book, but it's also an email course. And you'll send people, they sign up, you'll send people one lesson a day for 60 days. And you can access that if anybody's interested at influencerinc.co/60days LinkedIn. And my first question as we get started talking about the book here is when did your love affair, if you will, with LinkedIn really begin? Like when was that first moment when you saw the potential that LinkedIn has and how you could leverage it?
You know, I mean, that passion for LinkedIn really wasn't until the last 2 or 3 years. Now, I've been on LinkedIn since the early days, right when they started. In fact, I remember I was on LinkedIn early enough that I went to a business event and I got some guy's business card and I went home and I put his email address into LinkedIn to send him an invite to say, hey, come join me on LinkedIn. And he emailed me back and he was angry. He's like, why did you put my email address into this public online database? I don't know what this crazy LinkedIn website was. And even at the time, I was like, you never heard of LinkedIn? But this was like 10 years ago. Now I'm sure he's heard of LinkedIn, but that's how long I've been using LinkedIn, is since the days when people hadn't actually heard of it. But like everybody else, I used LinkedIn and I put all my information up there and then I left it there and nothing happened because I wasn't looking for a job. I'm running a business and every once in a while I'd get on there and I might look for a potential employee, or if somebody came in for an interview, I'd jump on and I'd look at their profile and check it out. But that's all I did with LinkedIn. And then about 2 years ago, actually more like 3 years ago, I was writing for Forbes magazine and I thought, hey, LinkedIn's got this blogging platform called Pulse. And I'm going to try sticking one of my Forbes articles up on LinkedIn and let's just see what happens. Because I knew the results I was getting on Forbes, but I had never tried blogging on LinkedIn before. So I took one of my Forbes articles, put it up on LinkedIn, and it got 10 times the traffic and engagement and comments and everything on LinkedIn that it got on Forbes. And I thought, wow, you know, I mean, Forbes obviously is this great brand, but if I want to get real engagement on my articles, maybe I should be just publishing on LinkedIn instead. So I kept doing that more and more. And finally, it got to the point where I thought, I'm having a lot more fun and I'm getting a lot more attention on LinkedIn than I'm getting on writing for Forbes and Fortune and Mashable and these other big magazines. And so that's when I started just diving into LinkedIn and experimenting with it and trying to get more traffic on LinkedIn. And I had a lot of success with that. And that's how it all started.
One of the things that you start your email series off with right away is, in fact, I think it's the second email, maybe day one, which is really to have success on LinkedIn, you need to have a purpose. Can you help us understand what that means when you say, look, you got to find your purpose on LinkedIn and work towards that?
Well, I'll use an example from when I started writing for Forbes, because this is when I found my purpose. And as a marketer, when I went on to Forbes, I was writing for Forbes, but I threw everything I knew out the window because I had run a marketing agency for years. I sit down with clients and we talk about your target audience and what you want to achieve and what your goals are and what strategy we're going to put in place. And then I got signed up for Forbes and I somehow forgot all of that. And I just started writing about whatever I felt like writing on Forbes. And that was fun. And I would get good responses from articles, but nobody knew who I was. I was just some guy writing about whatever was interesting to him. And then about 6 months into writing for Forbes, I thought, you know what? I run a marketing agency. Maybe I should write about marketing. That's something that I actually know something about. And so I started to focus my writing on Forbes on marketing. And once I found that focus, then all of a sudden I went from being, oh, that guy who sometimes writes interesting articles on Forbes, to he's that marketing agency guy who writes about marketing on Forbes and gives away all his marketing secrets. And so I became known as a marketing expert because of that focus. And that ended up generating tons of leads for my business. I can track over $5 million in business back to the articles I wrote for Forbes. I mean, it was incredible. So that focus was huge. I had a purpose, which was I wanted to grow my agency. And when I focused on that purpose and on my niche, I got results. So when I got onto LinkedIn, I did the same thing. I said, well, I'm going to have a purpose. I'm going to have a focus here. I'm not just writing about whatever I feel like writing about. My purpose is I'm going to grow my agency. And then later it turned into I'm going to grow my second business, which focuses on LinkedIn. So now I write about how to do things on LinkedIn. And that's my purpose, is to help people with things related to LinkedIn. Well, a lot of people go on LinkedIn and they post about whatever they're interested in. But if you post about your purpose, which might be you want to recruit talent, maybe it's you want to grow your business, maybe it's you want to get a job. When you have that goal in mind, it focuses your content, it changes what you write about, and it changes the results that you get.
Yeah, and one of the ways I think that you really touch on that I found fascinating as I was reading through your email series on LinkedIn Mastery was that to help you kind of focus in on that purpose is to really take some time to discover your zone of genius. What is the zone of genius and how does one find it?
So this zone of genius, this is something I heard about. I was reading a book called The Big Leap by a guy named Gay Hendricks, and it's an excellent book. You should definitely run out and buy it and read it. But he talks about this genius zone, which is essentially, it's the thing that makes you special, that sets you apart from other people, the thing that you can focus on and you can be better at than anybody else in the world. It's your calling, it's your mission, it's that type of thing. So, and the way to find this is to overlap what I call expert zones. So we're all experts at a lot of things. So you, Ryan, for example, you're a podcast expert. I already know that because we're doing this podcast together. And you're probably an expert at a lot of other things, probably 100 other things. But if we just look at podcasting and said, well, are you the best podcaster in the world? Well, nobody's really the best podcaster in the world. And whatever else you have these expert zones on, you're probably not the best in the world, no offense. But if we start overlapping those expert zones and say, okay, let's put together podcasting and then this other thing and this other thing and this other thing, we can overlap those things and come up with something that's truly unique. So for example, I mentioned I'm into skateboarding, right? So I love skateboarding. I also have run a marketing agency for 20 years. Neither of those things by themselves is very unique. There are 20 million skateboarders in the world, and there are, I don't know, a million people out running marketing agencies. So neither of those is a big deal by itself. But if you overlap those two and you say, okay, how many marketing agency owners also skateboard? I don't know, maybe 50 in the whole world. And then if I say, okay, I wrote a book about chief marketing officers. So how many marketing agency owners are skateboarders and have written a book interviewing 30 CMOs from big companies? Well, now we're down to one. I'm the only person in the world who's done that, who matches those three things. So if I wanted to walk into Adidas or Nike and say, hey, you guys are selling to skateboarders, I know what it's like to be a CMO. I know what it's like to run a marketing agency. I really get marketing and I really know this target demographic you're going after with skateboarders. I could position myself as a very unique commodity and that could be my genius zone. I could focus on that and say, hey, I'm better at this intersection than anybody else. So the question is for people listening, what makes you unique? What can you intersect? So maybe you're a lawyer. And that's not unique, but maybe you speak English and Chinese because maybe you grew up half in China and half in the US or something. Well, now that makes you a lot more unique. And then you add to that that you're living in a certain geography. Maybe you're in Cleveland, Ohio. Okay, how many people in Cleveland, Ohio speak English and Chinese and are lawyers? And you see how that group starts getting smaller and smaller. And there's an audience out there who's looking for you that you are an exact match for, that when they find you, they'll say, I have to work with you because you are exactly what I'm looking for. And that's the power of the genius zone.
Well, I think the other thing that's really cool about that too is you talk about the importance of finding your target audience, which I think is a real struggle for a lot of people, especially when they start a business because everybody says, well, everyone is my customer. And then eventually they work themselves down to figuring out who that audience is. Whereas I think if they started with the purpose and their target zone or their zone of genius, they could very quickly figure out who their target audience could be or should be.
Yep. Great example of this is my marketing agency, MWI. So I was over in China. I just moved to Massachusetts about 6 months ago. I was living in China for 2 years before that. And we were meeting with a client and we walked in and this client says to us, hey, we're looking at hiring you because we know you're an American agency, but you're here in China. And we need a digital marketing agency that has an office here in China and an office in the US and has one of their US people here in China. Well, I'm from the US and I'm sitting there looking at these people and I'm thinking, wait a second, how many competitors do we have that just match those few things that you just mentioned? I asked him, I said, Have you found any other agencies here in the city that match what you just said? Digital marketing, US-based, but also a China office. And they said, no. And I said, when do we sign a contract then? And we signed it 2 days later because we're an exact match for what they were looking for.
I want to slide in now and talk about the thing that most people get really excited about, if you will, within LinkedIn, which is how you optimize your profile. And I won't go into detail and profile pics, but I am curious, what are your thoughts on using a logo as your profile pic?
Well, you know, I'm not a big fan of using a logo because people, it's people. People do business with people that they know, like, and trust. And when you put a logo up on your LinkedIn profile, you're not showing that you're a human being, that you're a person, you're showing a corporate entity. And there's a place for that on LinkedIn. There are company pages. They don't usually perform that well. But the individual profiles, people expect to find a person there. And so I'm not a big fan of putting logos or products or anything strictly company related up there. It should be you, your smiling face.
I'm just curious. You obviously look at a lot of profiles. What's the worst one that comes to your mind as far as a profile picture that you've ever run across?
Well, the worst profile picture, well, maybe I shouldn't say the worst, but one of the worst things is just the no photo. It's when somebody doesn't have a photo up there at all. And so almost any photo is better than no photo. But if I have to look at actual photos that are up there that are bad, it's usually like a group photo where I'm like, I'm looking at this photo. I'm like, there are 10 people in this photo. I have no idea which person is the actual profile here. Or they have just a photo that's low resolution. It's super grainy, or they're super far away in the photo. So even though they're there, I can't see them because they're so small. There are a lot of ways to go wrong with those profile photos, but it's so easy to get it right. Everybody's got a smartphone. You pull it out, get decent lighting, take a photo of yourself smiling, looking at the camera, you're done. You've got a good photo.
Yeah, you give some really good examples in your email course of like 20 plus examples of, you know, what not to do. And I got to say, the crazy one always makes me laugh every time I look at it. But the worst picture I've ever seen is there was a picture of a guy who had a cigar in his mouth and was pointing a gun at the camera. And I'm just like, what? Who is this guy trying, you know, can you imagine who that guy's target audience might be?
if it fits his genius zone, if it fits his audience, who knows? Maybe it's the right fit for his audience.
Another image portion within a LinkedIn profile that you talk about, and other people mention it, but they kind of mention it in passing, but you like really focus on it in a couple of your emails, is the banner image. Why is the banner image such an important part of your LinkedIn profile?
Yeah, the banner. And for those who are thinking, what's the banner? It's that big square area behind your profile photo at the top of your profile. It's kind of a billboard shape. And that's how I like to think of it. It's like somebody gave you a free billboard here to put up whatever you want there. And this is one of the first things that people see on your profile is this big graphical space there. And so it always is amazing to me that people don't use it. They'll have the default LinkedIn blue banner up there, or they'll have a picture of a landscape or something that doesn't have anything to do with who they are or who they work with or the products or services that they're providing. And that banner area, it's valuable real estate. And to see that wasted is just a tragedy, in my opinion. So now what I also see is some people take that banner space and they fill it up with a bunch of text and really poor design. And even though they're using it, they're not using it very well. And so some basic tips for that banner area is just, number one, it should reinforce your personal brand, who you are, what you do, and who you do it for. It should reinforce that message. So sometimes the landscape is okay. So we had a client, she's based in Saudi Arabia. And so we put up a photo of Riyadh, of Saudi Arabia there, because it clued her target audience into the fact that, yes, I know Saudi Arabia, I'm here in Saudi Arabia, this is where I do business. So landscape's not necessarily bad, or a cityscape or something like that. And there are other things that you can put up there. I mean, if your business is doing veterinary services or working with animals, and so you have a banner and you have some animals in there, it makes sense to have animals in there. But if you're running a marketing division at some corporation in New York City and you put up a photo of your dog, that's not on brand. It might be a nice photo, it might be great, it might show that you like dogs, but it doesn't fit your personal brand.
when I look at a profile, I start with the banner, then I move to the profile picture, and then finally I get to the headline. And so I'm curious, is it ever okay to be a ninja or a pioneer in the headline on your LinkedIn profile?
It's okay to be a ninja as long as you don't use the word ninja. And yeah, this is another thing I say in my course is there are words you should not use on your LinkedIn profile. And the only reason I bring this up is because people actually do use these words on their LinkedIn profile. You'll see profiles where they say visionary, guru, ninja, wizard. I mean, I've seen crazy stuff where it's like, you would never walk up to somebody at a networking event and say, in all seriousness, I am a ninja at marketing. I am a marketing ninja. I am a marketing wizard. Like, you wouldn't introduce yourself that way. And so you shouldn't be introducing yourself on LinkedIn that way either. I think some people get caught up in this idea that LinkedIn is kind of like Wikipedia. And so it's not that you're writing about yourself. You're actually writing about somebody else or somebody else wrote your profile. But no, LinkedIn is, it's personal. It's you talking to your audience. And we really shouldn't be referring to ourselves as ninjas. It's fine to call other people that, but we shouldn't be talking about ourselves that way. It just comes off a little bit off.
So the next thing down, as we're kind of moving from the top to the bottom of the of your LinkedIn profile, is the About section. And you mentioned in the book and also in the email course that the first three lines of your About section are really important. Why are those three lines really important?
Well, it's not just because those are the first part, or that's the first part that people read. It's that when somebody goes to your profile, they only see three lines. The rest of it is cut off. And then there's a little link that says, see more. If you don't get people interested in those first three lines of your bio, they're not going to click on that see more, and they're not going to see the rest of your bio. So the rest of your bio might be incredible. You might have all sorts of details in there that will blow people away. But if you don't get the three lines right, nobody will ever read that. They won't see it. You won't have that chance to impact them. So those first three lines have to really draw people in and make them say, I have got to read the rest of this.
Yeah. And speaking of which, one of the ways you get people to read the rest of your profile as you go from top to bottom again is that you emphasize telling stories. How do you tell stories on LinkedIn in a way that, you know, doesn't come across as you just talking about you?
Sure.
If you know what I mean.
Now, it's not necessarily a bad thing to talk about yourself. I mean, people are coming to your LinkedIn profile. They want to learn about you, and it makes sense to tell them a story. And in all seriousness, you can start it off with once upon a time. Like, seriously, try starting your LinkedIn profile, your About section, with once upon a time, and then just continue that story and tell your story. And people will love it. They'll be drawn into it. And now, when we tell a story, it's not just giving information about ourselves. It is telling a story. There's got to be that hero's journey. But what I really love to do is I like to follow the recipe that Don Miller talks about in his book, Story Brand, which is he has this 7-step process where, and it starts out with, you've got somebody who has a problem. Now, this is not you. This is your audience. But that person, that's the character. They have a problem. And you come along and you're the guide. So if you think about Star Wars, Luke Skywalker, he's got a problem. Obi-Wan Kenobi comes along and he's Luke's guide to teach him all sorts of great things. You are Obi-Wan Kenobi. Your customer is Luke Skywalker. So you can use that type of storytelling format in your LinkedIn profile to say, hey, maybe this is you. You've got this problem. Think about your target audience and about your genius zone. You've got this problem. And I had this problem too, but here's how I solved it. And now I can help you to solve this problem. And you tell that story about how you figured it out. And then people will gain trust and say, okay, I see how he figured out that problem. Yeah, I want to hire this guy because he can help me figure out that same problem.
Yeah, yeah. As a Story Brand certified guide, I love that methodology. Uh-huh. And when I write profiles for people, I follow that same logic. You know, let's make it about your customer first, and then we can talk about how you can help them. And so as you're thinking about your profile and you're putting it together, and I mean, obviously, there's a lot of work that goes into creating a profile, a lot more than what most people think. One of the things I found interesting about your email course, and obviously it's going to be in the upcoming book, is you actually say or advocate that you should have more than one LinkedIn profile, as in You should have one in your native tongue, if you will, and then one in a different language. How do you do that? Like, how do you have two LinkedIn profiles, one in one language and one in another?
So LinkedIn provides this option to add languages to your profile. Now, you're not actually creating two separate profiles with separate logins and separate passwords. That's not what's happening here.
Okay.
But instead, LinkedIn says that you can add a new language profile. And what they do is they basically copy your profile, and then you can go in there and you edit it. So you can edit just parts of it with another language. So you can leave your title as is, but then put your bio in another language and leave the rest of it the same. So there are different ways that you can manage this, but you can have your language in Spanish and Chinese and German and Italian and a bunch of other languages in there. And the reason that you would want to do this is because there are people out there searching in other languages. That is, they speak another language, so they're using LinkedIn in Spanish or they're using LinkedIn in Chinese. And if you put up your profile in that language, then it makes it easy for them to find you. Now, you don't have, this isn't about communicating to them that you speak that language necessarily. You're just making it easier for them to get more information about you. You can even put at the beginning of your profile, I don't speak Spanish. This is just my Spanish language profile, or I don't speak Chinese. This is just my Chinese profile. But think about if you're a public speaker and you're looking for paid speaking gigs, you only present in English. But you're more than happy to go to China and present to a Chinese audience that understands English, or maybe they have translation. If you set up a Chinese language profile, that makes it easy for an event organizer in China who may only speak Chinese to find your profile and then reach out to you. And then you can handle all the translation and all that stuff, but you've just made it really easy for them to hire you, to find you, to hire you, to work with you. Whereas all the other speakers out there who don't have a Chinese profile, they're not going to get that business that you would get.
Yeah, and speaking of people trying to find you, keywords obviously is one of those ways in which they do that. Where do you, we won't get into where you find the keywords, but once you know what your keywords are, which by the way, it goes back to the beginning of our conversation, zone of genius, find your target audience, and assume that you can figure out what those keywords are. Where are the places you know that you should put them in order to help your chances of being found in search?
Sure. Now, when I talk to people about keywords, I like to explain how LinkedIn works a little bit, because LinkedIn will change and where you put your keywords over time might change as well. But if you understand fundamentally how LinkedIn works, you'll know where to put your keywords. And the key to the game is to put your keywords where people see information about you the most. And so you think about if somebody does a search on LinkedIn, it's going to pull up a list of profiles. It's going to show names and it's going to show titles. Well, that title shows up everywhere. It shows up in search results. It shows up just in comments. It shows up everywhere. So that's one of the key places to put those keywords, because LinkedIn is going to put more emphasis on that content that one is short, but also that shows up everywhere all over LinkedIn. So if you put a keyword in your title on LinkedIn, that's given more weight than if you put a keyword in your 10th work experience way down on the page, because LinkedIn knows that people are looking at that more and they're giving you less space. So they know that you would put your most important keywords in your title and at the top of your bio, places like that. So look at your profile, look at other people's profiles, look at where information shows up. Think about what you read first, what you read the most on other people's profiles. That's where you want to put your most important keywords. Your less important keywords can go further down. You can put those into your skills section. You can put them in at the end of your bio. You can put them into your work experience. But the most important two or three or four keywords should be in your title, should be in those first three lines of your bio, those spaces that show up everywhere.
Speaking of skills, is Microsoft Word a skill?
It's a skill, but it's not a skill anybody cares about. Everybody assumes that you know how to use Microsoft Word. So things like email, browsing, Gmail, Microsoft Word, don't list those as skills, because that's kind of like putting breathing, talking, using the phone. I mean, yes, it's a skill, but nobody cares. Nobody's looking for that skill.
I do find it interesting. Every now and then I'll come across the job description, because one of the things I do is work with hiring managers and recruiters to help them with the messaging in their job description. And they will ask for skills like Microsoft Word or Microsoft Office. And it's like, why? Why are you wasting the space that you have to ask for that? Because I think you should assume people know it. Like, for example, I asked my son just yesterday, when did you learn how to use Microsoft Word or Microsoft PowerPoint? And he said, fourth grade. Mm-hmm. Right. So if you're a professional, I think it's a good assumption that they know Microsoft. And if they don't, if you doubt that, you can easily test for that during an interview. You know, right. Use a service like Vervo and just say, hey, take this spreadsheet and figure out how you can, put together a pivot table for me. Boom, you know whether or not they can use it. Anyway, I digress. That's my kind of little rant for today because it drives me crazy when I see that. But anyway, back to LinkedIn here in your course, you recommend connecting with lots of people, which is different, I think, than what most people recommend. In fact, you say work towards the 30,000 connection followers, which I think today is the max that you can get. How can you do that and still make meaningful connections?
So this is, when I tell people that you should max out your account and connect to 30,000 people, the feedback I get from people is either, I mean, some people say, oh yeah, that sounds great. That's what I want to do. Other people say, well, no, I want to have a network of really high quality people. Obviously, I can't get to know 30,000 people. And so I don't want to do that because I don't want to be connected to a bunch of people that I don't know. And that's a reasonable opinion to have when you look at just the idea of LinkedIn as a group of people that you know well. But think about LinkedIn from a different perspective. Think about it as a broadcast medium that you use to get your message out, in addition to being a networking group or a group where you manage your close network connections. On LinkedIn, when you post content, so you post something to the feed and it goes out there and other people see it, the more people you're connected to, the more people are going to see that content. And if people interact with that content, then their connections that you may not be connected to will also see your content. So if you're connected to 1,000 people and you post something, maybe 5% of your connections are going to see that content, be able to interact with it, and then their connections will see it. If you're connected to 30,000 people, then 30 times the number of people are going to see that content and interact with it. So your content is going to go a lot further. Now, those people who see your content, yeah, these might not be really close connections, but they are potential customers, they are potential clients, and you can still have meaningful relationships with these people. Think about Oprah. Oprah had a TV show that millions of people watched. Obviously, Oprah did not have two-way communication with all these people. She did not have close friendships with all these people, but did she not have meaningful connections or meaningful relationships with those people? Would those people say it was meaningless? And that's why they watched Oprah. I mean, they were getting value from that. They were getting meaning. There was something that they were getting from that that to them was very special. And there are people out there who will absorb your content and it's going to be value-adding for them. It's going to be meaningful for them. And they might turn into customers and clients and they might turn into those close connections. But if you're cutting yourself off and saying, oh, I'm only going to connect with people I've met in person or I'm only going to connect with 1,000 people so that I can maintain a really high quality network, you are cutting yourself off from that kind of exposure and being able to serve all those people.
Now, one of the ways you recommend getting there, say quicker, if you will, is that you go ahead and add your personal content or contacts. And then if you have an example as an email list, go ahead and upload those folks too. Now, what happens? Because I think a lot of people get nervous when they say add my contacts, right? So if I add my contacts or upload a list, will LinkedIn automatically send out connection requests to all those folks? Or how does that work? What happens after I upload or add contacts?
So there are two steps here, or there are two options once you upload your list. And I recommend doing the first one, but not the second one. And the first thing that happens is when you upload an email list, and this can be, you can connect to LinkedIn with Gmail or Yahoo Mail or whatever, and it will upload your address book automatically, or you can download a list or have an email list in a spreadsheet and you can upload that. And what it's going to do is it's going to show you everybody from that email list who's already on LinkedIn. And I recommend you connect to all those people. It gives you one button and you might have 5,000 people on that list that show up on LinkedIn. Yes, click that button and say, I want to connect to all 5,000 of these people. These are people you know. They're in your address book. They're in your database. These are people who know you. they should see that connection request come in and say, oh yeah, I know Bob. Yeah, I'm going to accept this because I know him. We've exchanged emails. So I would recommend connecting to all those people. However, there might be 5,000 email addresses on that list that are not in LinkedIn. And so the next step in LinkedIn is it's going to come up with a screen and say, do you want to send an email to all these people inviting them to join LinkedIn? And I would recommend you don't do that because most people are on LinkedIn, but they may not be using all their email addresses on LinkedIn. And so if you click yes on that button, it is going to send out 5,000 emails to these people and they're going to get an email and it's going to say, Bob is inviting you to join LinkedIn. And you're going to be like, I'm already on LinkedIn. Why am I getting an email asking me to join LinkedIn? And then if you click on the button, it will say, yeah, you can sign up with this email address. And you're going to say, well, I already have an email address on LinkedIn. And it causes all sorts of confusion. So I would do the first step that says, do you want to connect to your friends that we found who are already on LinkedIn? Yes. Do you want to send out a bunch of email invitations to these people that LinkedIn thinks are not on LinkedIn? No, just don't bother with that second one and skip it.
Yeah. So how does LinkedIn handle that? Like I know there's supposedly nobody really, I don't think anybody really knows the numbers. Maybe you do, but like there's a number of contacts you can make in any given day before LinkedIn starts to say, hey, you're bumping up against a commercial limit or you're doing something that's against that free account. Does LinkedIn treat those contacts differently? Let's say you had 500. Would they only send it to, you know, 100 first and then 100 next, to, you know, kind of put them in groups? Or do they just look at it and go, we'll just contact all of them because you're asking us to do it as opposed to you doing it individually?
So the limits are somewhere between 1,500 to 3,500, depending on what type of account you have and how many connections you already have and some other factors.
Okay.
However, I don't know the answer to if they hit that limit when you're uploading an email list yourself. It might be different since you already have their email addresses. And so LinkedIn knows, hey, you already know these people. So that's a little bit different and it might let you get away with that. Plus, how do you not upload the entire list at once? So there are limits. So if you go in and you start connecting to people manually, one at a time, just connecting to people and clicking that connect button, you'll get up to 1,500 or 2,500 depending on where you're at. And it will say, hey, you've sent out enough invitations. You can't send out any more. But I suspect with the list, it might be different, but I don't know the answer.
LinkedIn is a networking platform. One of the things that you talk about in your email series is this thing called content-based networking. Can you explain a little bit about what that means?
So content-based networking is where you use content to get in touch with people that you want to talk to, you want to get to know. And essentially, the carrot that you're dangling is that they get to be part of the content that you're creating. And so if you have a podcast, you say, you know what? I want to talk to Bill Gates. How could I get in touch with Bill Gates? Well, if I just email him, he'll never respond. But I've got this really popular podcast, so maybe if I reach out and say, I want to interview Bill Gates for my podcast, maybe he'd be willing to talk to me, and then I've got his email address, and I can talk to him, and I can talk about other things as well, because I've already given him value by giving him exposure through that podcast. Now, that might be tricky with Bill Gates, but there are a lot of people that this will work for. I mean, Gary Vaynerchuk, very easy to get a hold of if you've got a podcast and you want to interview him. He doesn't even ask how many subscribers you've got. So there are a lot of people out there that it might be really hard to get a hold of them, but if you can involve them in an article, a blog post, a podcast, or any sort of content that you're creating, that becomes enough of an incentive that you get to talk with them and chat with them for, who knows, 30, 60, 90 minutes.
Yeah, I think, you know, I've found when I've reached out to folks, even like yourself, if I offer to have you on the podcast to talk about your book or something that you have some thought leadership that's unique, 9 times out of 10, people will say yes. And I've only had one person ever ask me what my downloads were. And to me, as a podcaster, as soon as they ask that question, it's not because they don't want to share the information, but I know that their mind is in the wrong place. And so I don't necessarily want them on my podcast.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I had the same experience with my book. I'm writing this book about LinkedIn and I reached out to a bunch of LinkedIn influencers and said, hey, I'd like to get some input from you for this book. And everybody was, hey, yeah, that's great. I would love to contribute a quote. I'd love to be quoted in your book. Everybody, except for one guy, was like, so how much am I being compensated for helping you out with your book? And I was like, well, never mind.
Wow. And
so he doesn't get to be in the book.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's the type of person that I want to have in the book. And he's probably fine with that too. But I mean, and the funny thing is, he isn't even somebody like, there are some very high profile people that I can get to be in my book for free. And this guy is not one of those high profile people. But yeah, most people, even if they're super high profile, if they've got the time, they're more than happy to be in that. I mean, when I wrote my book, Chief Marketing Officers at Work, I wanted to interview CMOs from big companies. I was able to get CMOs from GE, Spotify, PayPal, Target. No problem. Not a single one of them asked about compensation or anything. They just said, yeah, how long's the phone call? And I said, 60 minutes. And they said, great, let's do it. And that was it. And I was able to interview these amazing people.
Yeah, it's awesome. I remember a conversation with Dori Clark on an earlier podcast where she talked about your content-based networking is what she refers to as a giving request versus a taking request, meaning I'm going to give you something in return for your time, which is, you know, the audience that I've grown and built that you wouldn't necessarily have exposure to, versus, hey, I just want to talk to you for an hour and take your time and give you nothing back.
Yeah. I mean, I do get requests a lot that say, hey, can I have 15 minutes of your time to chat? I think we can do some great things together. And my response is, first of all, I'm getting a lot of these requests and I don't know that you really have something of value to offer me. And I would love to chat with everybody, but I don't have time to chat with everybody who wants 15 minutes of my time. So I have to say no to people. But yeah, when somebody comes and says, can I interview you for my 1 hour podcast? Well, they're giving me amazing value. So yeah, I will be on that podcast and then we get to chat for a whole hour.
Speaking of amazing value, you put out a lot of really great content on LinkedIn. And one of the things that you espouse as you start to get into the content creation system, if you will, is that you need to slay the same dragon every day. What do you mean by that?
This goes back to the genius zone and your focus. This was advice that I got when I was writing for Forbes. When I started, there was a Forbes editor, and this was his advice, was go out, slay the same dragon every day. That's how you become successful as a writer, because that's how you get known for what you do. And like I was telling earlier, I didn't do this for the first few months. And then I focused on marketing and everything popped and it helped me grow my agency and it generated amazing revenue and everything once I started slaying that same dragon every day. And it's once you have a purpose, it makes it a lot easier. But it's so much easier if you go into content creation knowing that this is where you need to get to, that you need to be talking about the same thing day in and day out. Because if you don't, you don't get known for anything. If you do talk about the same thing every day, then people know you as, oh, he's the marketing expert. She's the computer expert. They get to know you as that thing, and that's what they want to go there for. They don't want all the other stuff. Now, if you get to be famous and you're really well known, then you can take 5% of your time and you can talk about your family and your dog and your other stuff to humanize yourself. But you really need to have that 90, 95% focus, that dragon that you're killing every day, so that people know you as that person who does that.
Yeah, so as you're working towards getting known for something, what role or how important do you think hashtags are going to become in your content over time to becoming known for something?
Hashtags on LinkedIn are really interesting because they haven't taken off. I mean, they haven't really taken off anywhere other than Twitter and Instagram. They haven't really taken off on Facebook, and they definitely haven't taken off on LinkedIn. But LinkedIn seems to be pushing them more and more. And so it really all depends on LinkedIn. If LinkedIn makes hashtags so that you can really get some great value by using them, then people will use them. So far, I can use hashtags in my posts. It doesn't create a flood of traffic. It doesn't bring a lot of people my way. And so I'll throw them in there every once in a while because I'm always experimenting and trying things out. And who knows, maybe things have changed. So I'll throw some in there. But I've never really seen a case study where somebody used hashtags and it drove a ton of traffic or really made a difference. Where I use hashtags is actually more as a user. I'll go in and I'll look at what other people are using. And I'll use those hashtags to go find content that I'm interested in or that I want to learn something about. And so I've found hashtags useful from one standpoint, not so much from the content creation standpoint, but I also keep using hashtags sometimes because I think about other people who might be looking for helpful content. And even if it's just one or two people out there, I feel like, yeah, it's so easy for me to add it in. I'll add it in and maybe it's helpful for somebody out there. And so I'll use them sometimes, but it's not been a game changer for me. And I haven't seen anybody create a case study where they've said, yeah, I use these hashtags or this is my strategy. And man, I'm just blowing up on LinkedIn. I just haven't seen that.
Interesting. One thing that you do that you also talk about, which I thought this was interesting too, but you said if there was a button to disable sharing for your posts, you would have that turned on all the time. Isn't that kind of counterintuitive to what most people think, which is you want people to share your posts, but you're suggesting not so much. Why is that?
Yeah, that sounds like the rudest thing ever, right? Like, I don't want people to share my content. It's like, what? This is social media, right? But the thing with LinkedIn is if you create a post and then somebody shares it, it creates a duplicate of your post. And then people go and engage on that post and those numbers don't reflect on your original post. What you really want is you want everybody coming back to your original post. And so what I would much rather have happen is I want people who like my post to comment on my post. Because when they comment on my post, then it actually shows that to their audience and brings their people to my original post. When they share my post, those shares usually get very little, no engagement or very little engagement. And that engagement is in a separate place. And then I've got 10 places I need to respond to comments. And I would rather have all that attention go into one post and really build up that one post. But I mean, of course, when people share my content, I'm not going to be rude. I'm going to be appreciative. Hey, thank you so much for sharing my content. But inside my head, I'm thinking, oh man, I wish I could just turn this off somehow.
It makes sense when you explain it. When you read it the first time, it's like one of those, what? What's he saying? But I get it. We're going to go ahead and start to wrap things up here. Just a few more questions. I'm curious, who are some of your favorite influencers on LinkedIn that you think people should be following?
So first guy who pops to mind is Dale Dupree, who's the sales copier warrior. And I'm going to call him a warrior. He is a ninja, but he actually has a samurai sword. So he can get away with calling himself a warrior. But this guy, he's focused more on sales these days, but he actually used to do copier sales. And he would write these, think about like the most boring sales job of all time is selling copy machines. I mean, it almost sounds like a joke or a TV show or something, right? And this guy was selling copy machines, but he would post content on LinkedIn, not about the greatest, latest copy machines, but about his experiences going in and getting through gatekeepers and doing cold calling and all this sales type stuff and how he would develop relationships with people. And it was fascinating. These were great stories. And what happened is, he actually made me want to buy a copy machine, and I don't have any use for a copy machine. But I was like, man, it just makes me want to buy a copy machine from this guy because I like him and his stories are funny and they're really educational and interesting and I'm getting all these great sales tips from them. And so even though he's moved on and he's not selling copy machines anymore, still in my head, Dale Dupree is like the copy machine guy because of all this content he pumped out. Well, you think about how can you use that strategy to promote your business. Dale never, ever was pushing his copy machines and saying, hey, contact me if you want to buy a copy machine. Never. He never did that. And yet he's cemented in my head as the only guy I would ever go to talk about copy machines because he was producing interesting content around the process. He was documenting the process. So you can document your business. You can talk about what you do and tell stories about what it's like. And people will like you and then they'll trust you and then you'll get ingrained in their heads as, oh, the guy or the gal who does such and such. And that's just a great content strategy. So Dale Dupree is one of those people. AJ Wilcox is a great guy who knows everything about LinkedIn advertising. If you want to do paid advertising on LinkedIn, he's the expert and he says a lot of great stuff about how to use LinkedIn ads. Michaela Alexis is another influencer who's great. Andy Foote. Alan Gannett does a lot of video interviews with people that are super interesting. So he's a fun one to follow. There's so many others. There are just a ton of them out there.
one of the things I'd like to know as we start to wrap up here is tell me a little bit about Influencer Inc. and what you do and how, or what you do and how you help your customers with that business.
So Influencer Inc. was an unintentional business. I had MWI, my marketing agency. I still have that. I'm the founder, but I have partners who are running that. And when they started taking over and I started transitioning everything to them, that created a vacuum. And of course, nature abhors a vacuum. And as an entrepreneur, I had to do something. And so I started coaching people on personal branding and leadership and influence. And then I created this business called Influencer Inc. And then we kind of gravitated towards LinkedIn services. And that's how this business came about. It wasn't where I said, hey, I'm going to go create a business to do LinkedIn stuff for people. It was more one step led to another. And suddenly I've got this business. And now we're doing audits and profile rewrites. And we do LinkedIn management for people and just, and we've got these courses and I'm writing this book. So it all just kind of happened accidentally. But really what gets me excited about it is I believe most people in the world are good. And if I can help people become more influential, they'll use that influence to do good things and make the world a better place. My little niche that I'm focusing on right now is LinkedIn, helping people become more influential there. But ultimately, I really want to branch out and help people in a lot of different areas, whether it's writing books or getting on podcasts or doing PR for themselves and helping people to expand their influence so that they can get their message out there and change the world however they see fit.
So for those folks who are looking to expand their influence to get their message out into the world, or they just want to follow you or learn more about what you do, what are some of the best ways for those people to get in touch with you?
LinkedIn, of course, is a great place to get in touch with me. And then also my personal website is joshsteimle.com.
Okay. And I don't know if I asked you this. Is there a release date on the book yet?
Not yet. It's kind of an interesting process. I signed up with this company called Publishizer. They do kind of a Kickstarter for books type of thing where you crowdfund your book, but it's really like a pre-order campaign. And so we raised $26,000. We sold 605 copies. But now what they do is they turn into a book agent for me, and now they're pitching the book to mainstream publishers. So they're going after Simon & Schuster and HarperCollins and all these publishers, and they're saying, hey, this guy already sold 600 copies of his book in 1 month, so there's a lot of demand for this. You should really publish his book, and we've already got money to pay for the first 600 copies. And so they do that. And so now I'm waiting for them to go through this pitching process and hopefully come back to me with a great deal from a publisher.
Awesome. I think people need to go out and not only pick up the book, but if they can't wait for the book, they should go out and pick up your email course, which is also titled 60 Days to LinkedIn Mastery, which they can find at influencerinc.co, 60/60 days LinkedIn. So Josh, do you have any final thoughts, tips, words of wisdom, anything you'd like to leave with the audience today?
The biggest tip I have for success on LinkedIn is focus on the audience and give them what they want. When you give the audience what they want, you'll find success on LinkedIn. That's like the one tip that makes everything work.
Awesome, Josh. I think you gave the audience exactly what they want today. I appreciate you taking time to be a guest on the show.
Thank you so much, Ryan.